Our study tonight is out of the book of Zechariah, chapter 7, verses 1 through 14, God's call for obedience above ritualism. Zechariah, along with Haggai, called the returning Hebrews back to rebuilding the temple, and he gave God's directives and future hope. In Zechariah 7, 1 to 14, God responded to a question from a Hebrew delegation from Bethel on whether they should continue to observe the self-imposed fast that lamented the burning of the first temple. God's response offers a timeless lesson in obeying him above man-made ritualism. So we view it for our insight and edification. I want to read the chapter, and then we'll look at it. Zechariah chapter 7, verses 1 through 14. It came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah on the fourth day of the ninth month, even in Kislew, when they had sent unto the house of God Sherezer and Regem-Melech and their men to pray before the Lord, and to speak unto the priests which were in the house or the temple of the Lord of hosts, and to the prophets, saying, Should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself as I have done these so many years? Then came the word of the Lord of hosts unto me, saying, Speak unto all the people of the land, and to the priests, saying, When you fasted and mourned in the fifth and the seventh month, even those 70 years, did you at all fast unto me, even to me? And when you did eat, and when you did drink, and did you not eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Should you not hear the words which the Lord has cried by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and in prosperity? And the cities thereof round about her, when men inhabited the south and the plain. And the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Execute true judgment, show mercy, compassions, every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor, and let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. But they refused to hearken, and pulled away the shoulder, and stopped their ears, that they should not hear. Yea, they made their hearts as an adamant stone, lest they should hear the law, and the words which the Lord of hosts had sent by his Spirit by the former prophets. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. Therefore it has come to pass that as he cried, and they would not hear, so they cried, and I would not hear, saith the Lord of hosts. But I scattered them with a whirlwind among all the nations whom they knew not. Thus the land was desolate after them, that no man passed through nor returned, for they laid the pleasant land desolate. All right, the Lord gave a first message to direct Israel away from dead ritualism to heeding his word. This is verses 1 through 7. Part way through the temple reconstruction, about 2 or 3 years into it, some men from Bethel arrived to ask the temple priests and the prophets if they should still serve the fast of the fifth month to commemorate the burning of the temple by the Babylonians. Now, the King James omits the phrase that they were from Bethel, but both the English Standard Version and the New International Version correctly add it. I checked my Hebrew Bible, Biblia Hebraica, page 963, and for some reason the King James did not put that these men were from Bethel, but they are from Bethel. The only fast that God had told Israel to observe was the fast of the Day of Atonement, or we know it as Yom Kippur, on the 10th day of the 7th month. That's commanded in Leviticus chapter 16, verses 29 to 30. So the fast of the 5th month, recalling the burning of the temple, and the fast of the 7th month, remembering the assassination of Gedaliah, the Jewish governor of Judah, in 2 Kings 25, 23-25, were both self-imposed rituals. They had imposed it upon themselves. God directed Zechariah to respond by not immediately answering the question by the men of Bethel, waiting to do so in his fourth message in Zechariah chapter 8, verses 18 to 19. But God had Zechariah address all Israel with a special response from him. It's like the Lord had been waiting a long time to address this. Since they brought it up, he says, all right, now we're going to address this. That divine response critiqued their two self-imposed fasts of the fifth month for the temple's burning and the seventh month for the death of Gedaliah, all during their 70 years of the Babylonian captivity. For those fasts were not observed for the Lord, but for themselves. The people had selfishly grieved over the loss of their national sovereignty and their homeland, but they had not repented of the sins they had committed that had led God to allowing their nation to fall and be destroyed by Babylon. It's interesting, God's focus was on obeying him and not sinning, but their focus wasn't on that. They just didn't want to lose their nation and their temple. Two different focuses. And so God is addressing this situation. To explain, the Lord asked them if they had not heeded the words that he had cried by the former prophets when Jerusalem was prosperous and inhabited and the cities flourished in the nation, words calling for them to turn back to the Lord and to practice justice. Well, then God gave a second message in verses 8 to 14. To lead Israel to recall their forefathers' need to repent. This is interesting. God's looking at the precedent. Okay, how did you get into this situation where you went into this fast? What's the real root of this whole problem? And God goes back. You didn't obey me in the beginning. So that's what he's doing. The second message, Zechariah 7, 8 to 14, centered on the conduct of the earlier generation that resulted in the exile. God had wanted the fathers to execute true judgment and to show mercy and compassion to one another, not to oppress the vulnerable in their midst, like the widows, the fatherless, and the foreigners and the poor, and not for anyone to plot evil against his neighbor. It's interesting how God is really, really concerned about how people treat one another. The people weren't focusing on how they were treating one another. They were just trying to impress God by bringing their sacrifices and looking good at the temple site. And God says, no, that doesn't work with me. You go out and treat your neighbor properly. You go out and treat your, one another properly, and then come and bring your sacrifice. However, they had refused to obey this divine directive, figuratively, rebelliously pulling away their shoulder, stopping their ears that they should not hear, and making their hearts as hard like stone, lest they should obey the law of God that had been voiced by the former prophets. It's like a three-year-old saying, nope, just turning around and walking off. And God says, you're acting just like a bunch of three-year-olds. Accordingly, God's great wrath had fallen on them because they would not obey. As God had cried unto the people through his prophets, and they would not hear, so they eventually cried unto the Lord. And the Babylonians came, but God would not hear. But he scattered them among the Gentile nations that were strange to them. Their land was made desolate. No man passed through the countryside or returned in their land, for the land itself was left desolate. It's interesting. God just goes right back to the root cause. So when the men from Bethel asked the priests and the prophets if they should still keep the fast, commemorating the burning of the first temple, now that the second temple was being rebuilt, God said that he was not impressed by their self-imposed fasts over the temple's destruction, nor over their nation's fall, for those fasts were held in self-centered grief over their loss of blessing. Rather, God wanted his people to obey him, that he might bless them. In application, may we never fall in love with religious rituals as an end in themselves, for God has no love for rituals for the sake of rituals themselves. He has a heart for heartfelt obedience to him. May we hold to the lifestyle that expresses true judgment, mercy, compassion, protecting the vulnerable in our midst, and not plotting evil against one another. That's the lifestyle that God desired from Israel's forefathers. Incidentally, that's the lifestyle that he desires from his people today. It's not all this rigmarole and showmanship. What he's after is a proper relationship, a proper treatment of one another. And three, if we realize that we hold to a false spirituality, may we repent of it. Some time ago, there was a person who was visiting the church and noticed that we did this introduction. We have a theological introduction before the service starts. And he addressed it, and this person said, do you think that you're just getting into ritualism or into creedalism? That's the word that he used. And I said, you know, if this was a mainline Protestant church, I could see that you might have a concern about that. But I said, that introductory speech from the very beginning arose because of needs that were in the church. I was actually asked to address certain things. So that the speech actually started off with just the giving of the gospel. But then other people had a concern about this or that, whatnot. So it started to expand. What we're finding now is that when new people are coming, and I just heard about this recently, as they've come, they like the fact that right up front, we share what our beliefs are. There's a couple that has joined our church here recently. I know this is a recording, so I won't mention their names. But they indicated that when they first showed up at Nepok Church, they had driven by the church a number of times. They thought they'd just show it. And when they came in, they heard us teaching, giving our beliefs right up front. And that very much impressed them. That's what they wanted. They had come from a mainline church, and it was sort of dead. So we stayed with that. The same has happened with the communion service. Now, I am actually an ordained Baptist pastor. And in the Baptist realm, you never do the communion service as extensively as what we do here, the introduction. But the introduction has come about because, especially, we have a large number of people who've come from a Roman Catholic background. And they say, we know, Pastor, what you're going to say, but we never tire of it. Because you have no idea how transubstantiation was drummed into us when we were kids. And when we go home, we get hit over the head with this from extended family members and relatives who actually persecute us because we're not holding to that. So to us, it's an encouragement just to hear you go through it again. So I said, okay, if that's the case, we're going to do this. We're going to keep doing it. And that's why we're trying to do it, we don't want to get into just dead ritualism, but at this particular point, it is a need. I also found out that some of our young people are actually memorizing my spiel. In fact, if I do it slightly differently or mess up slightly, they tell on me to their parents, call me the carpet. I thought, well, if that's what they're going to do, if they want to memorize, we'll give them something to memorize. And so we encourage them in regards to that. I also found out that there's a man who has started coming to our church, has started to bring his daughter, because he wants to hear her to hear that introductory, because that's a summary of the Christian faith, and that's what he wants. So he has her in the morning service specifically to hear that introduction. So, you know, as long as the Lord is indicating through our experience that what we're supposed to be doing, we do that. Of course, we're always checking. We don't want to just fall into a dead ritualism, but we're always checking. We want to make sure that what we're doing is actually ministering to the real needs of people and never getting to dead creedalism. But God is really interested in how we treat one another. Very important. So we'll keep that in mind.